everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have two sponsors to mention at the top of the show. One of them is the CSS Summit. So CSSSummit.com, which is an online summit, 3 days all about CSS and SAS, and from people that work at Google and IBM and Adobe and Sparkbox, and talking about CSS and SAS and all kinds of stuff. It's going to be awesome. Go to CSSSummit.com and lynda.com. How does that go, Dave?
LYNDA.com.
Which is the kind of the world's largest online learning resource, and we'll tell you just how big it is and how awesome it is later in the show. But for now, go to lynda.com/shoptalk. Let's kick things off with a brand new theme song.
Shopping Maniacs, you're listening to the brand new theme song for the Shop Talk Show. Thank you to I'm Dave Rupert. With me is Chris Coyer.
That's
Chris,
right. It threw you all off, man. I feel like you're it's so short. It's shorter now, the theme song. We kind of get right into it.
Gotta get right into it. But we gotta say thanks to Chris Taylor from stillbreathing.co.uk for doing our theme song. He can make you theme songs for a price. And he actually did the original theme song, and we were like, hey, we want something kind of folkier. And he was like, how about this like Kodachrome sounding thing? And we were like, heck yes. And yeah, so it's kind of fun. I'm into it. It's good. I know everyone out there is like, who moved my theme song cheese? But trust me, you'll get used to it over some time. Yep.
Yeah, Chris. I love it. So thanks to Chris for that and stuff. Freshens things up a little bit around here. We have a very special guest. It's a normal show, a guest day. We have with us Tiffany Rayside. Hey, Tiffany, thanks for joining us.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Ta-da. Sorry, I was slow on the soundboard.
Hey. Find the button. You get it. That's fantastic, Tiffany. I love that your Twitter bio is a highly idiosyncratic web dev hobbyist. that's you, right?
That is me, yes.
Okay,
pretty much. Mm-hmm. In a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. So the reason that we got you on, or that I know you, none of us have met in person, but we've met virtually many times mostly because of your kind of amazing work on CodePen. So that's our connection. You probably are probably the most prolific CodePen member, period, I would say.
Wow, thank you.
With lots of stuff, and we're gonna get all into that, but maybe just a little bit more background. You're Freehold, New Jersey.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, cool. And you don't get paid for working on CodePen, sadly. Maybe we can change that someday, but you have to.
I would love that. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to figure out how we can get that going someday. But for now, you have to work. So you
Can I hijack?
Yeah.
I am on your profile. It's TMR Develops, right?
Yes,
and
correct.
Capital D in Develops. And your like most popular showcase thing is this like 3D scene, parallax, mouse scrolly fantasy land. This is
Enchanted.
Yeah. These are amazing like displays of raw strength. I am. This is an amazing like tour of, and you have like a custom profile. I'm jealous. Anyway, this is amazing. You have a lot of cool stuff on your CodePen profile.
Thank you.
I would just want to hijack. Sorry.
Well, it's interesting to know. Just so you know that must have been chosen specifically by Tiffany, because the showcase, you kind of pick whatever pen you want to be that one.
Exactly, and this is one of my favorites. The parallax imaging. It's one of my favorites out of all the pens that I've done. And I don't know if it's the images itself. I'm not quite sure what I love about it, but something about it that's just enchanting, I guess.
It's unusual. I think parallax, when we think of it, on the web usually is like is divs and stuff, and we like translate X on them, and it's and use JavaScript to mostly just to watch the scroll position and stuff. And that's not the approach you took at all here. This is Canvas parallax. It's kind of a different
correct.
It's a totally different world, right?
Exactly. And it's really just overlaying images on top of each other. And then they all move at different speeds when your mouse hovers. So mm-hmm.
based on their like 3D depth or whatever.
Correct. Yes. Yeah.
So cool. One of the things.
That's going to be me the whole show.
Cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can take just like a JPEG and paint it to a canvas, right? I mean, just starting with that, there's probably people out there that don't even know that, right?
Right. Yeah. No, these are just, I think it's 3 or 4 separate JPEG images
mm-hmm.
that are loaded onto the canvas. So,
and maybe even how does the transparency part work then? Are they alpha transparent PNGs, or does there some kind of way that you can, cause you know, you can like see through the branches of the tree to what's behind it.
Yeah. Each image, like, for instance, the tree that you see in the front there, that big yeah. black tree, there's nothing behind that tree in the image. It's kind of transparent in the background. And the same with the image behind that and the image behind that.
Oh, I see.
So,
they really are yeah. JPEGs, though. So that's...
They really are JPEGs, yeah.
That's weird because JPEGs don't support the concept of transparency, you know?
Oh, is it like compositing them? Is that what you're...
Yeah, these images I actually...
Oh, they're white. Wherever is white in the JPEG ends up being transparent somehow.
Exactly.
Right.
Ah.
Oh, that's cool.
Very cool. And you could... Oh, sorry. Now I'm, like, going deep. Like, you could do this with any, like, 3D model that you, like, exported, too. Okay. All right. I've got plans. Because that's like the tree just looks like a 3D export thing. That's cool. Anyway, all right.
We should, hey. This is, I like the where this is going though. We should open up more pens and ask Tiffany how she did it. That could be
oh,
the
God.
But some of the other stuff you, so TMR Develops is the CodePen profile. It's also TMR Develops on Twitter as well, if you want to follow Tiffany.
Yeah,
there.
I pretty much kept it all uniform with the email, the Twitter, and CodePen because I didn't start the Twitter thing until after I started CodePen. Mm-hmm. So I figured it just made sense.
You're the only one. It's a rare. I like that. Though. That's how I roll, too. I do the just keep it the same everywhere for consistency.
Yeah.
So one of the earlier things you did at CodePen that was really cool is because people ask you, you know, because there's a kind of a comment thread on every single pen, people would be like, how did you do that? And you'd always be super helpful with them and explain things and be like, if you want to learn, do this and this or check this pen out or search around CodePen for other examples. It's kind of the beauty is that you can see all the code that people did. And eventually that
yes.
turned into a... you know, let's kind of learn Canvas together. And there was a tag, the Canvas Club. I remember
right.
that was going around. So that was pretty cool. And you can still, I mean, we can link that up. But the idea is that, I don't know, it wasn't just any Canvas pen ever. It was ones that like people were trying to learn or that kind of clearly showcased a kind of interesting ability of Canvas.
Exactly. It was mostly, I think, for people that were trying to learn so that, if you had a starter pen and you were having trouble, you know, anybody that was, I guess, participating in the Canvas Club could kind of jump in and try to help you work through it. It was supposed to just give you a little small community of Canvas people that can help you grow. I don't think it really went as far as it probably could have, but that's okay.
No, but it wasn't, it's not like it was a failure or anything. I think,
it wasn't a failure at all. No. I think it got people involved and more interested in doing Canvas because a lot of people seem to stay away from Canvas for one reason or another. And I think it sort of gave people awareness and made them a little bit more interested as to what they can do.
Yeah.
With Canvas.
Yeah, I mean, community doesn't mean any one big thing. I mean, it can just be, you know, I don't know, now that they're a part of this little thing or they've tagged their pen or they know somebody else cares or they know somebody else is watching, that might be just the little push that they need to,
exactly.
to get into
it's
this.
It's just
stuff.
Encouragement.
Mm-hmm. So did you, I mean, because you're so good at that and providing that encouragement for people and showing them the work, where does that come from? Was there other points in your life or career that where people were helpful to you or that you wished that you had that and didn't have it? Or is there any connections to your...
No, you know, there isn't. I think it's just by nature. That's just how I am. I can't contribute that to any one thing that happened in my life that made me that way.
Right.
I've always been that way. I've always gone out of my way to help people. And I don't know why. You know, it's not like I get anything in return. So I don't know why. I just...
Oh, that's great. I mean, that's even better. It's just from the depths.
It's from the heart. You know, it's from my soul. No, I don't know. I guess maybe just the way I was raised. My parents are very similar mm-hmm. to that. They always are very helpful towards others. So I think when you grow up seeing that in your life, you tend to emulate it. And
sure. And there's probably some positive reinforcement, right? When you do nice things and people do nice things back to you,
it comes around eventually.
Yeah,
it comes around eventually. It does. I mean, you don't see the effects of it right away most of the time, but it does come around eventually. It's like karma, you know. Karma has its way of coming back at you, and it's going to come back in a bad way or a good way. So,
right, might as well be a good way. That's good.
Might as well be a good way, definitely.
So then more recently, I mean, I see, I think it was basically you that started this stuff on CodePen. There was kind of, you know, so a lot of people would build things and they just happen to use rainbow colors because why not? CodePen's a very visual place. And I don't know, it ends up making for kind of nice demos when there's lots of colors flying around. And then I don't exactly remember how it started, but there's a lot of people doing it on a particular weekend. And then it just, there was kind of literal rainbow shapes happening. And then it started to take form in the last, I don't know, probably couple months or even couple weeks, really, that, you know, let's formalize it at least a little bit, like, you know, a little bit like Canvas Club, but maybe even more official. And then we're like, okay, well, instead of just rainbow anything, we'll have like rainbow squares or rainbow stars. And then there was rainbow straight lines. And then and then there's kind of a hashtag developed for it. And it started to go to Twitter and made its way to the blogs. And there's collections around it. And it's starting to become a little thing. And I'm like kind of happy with it because, of course, you know, anything that, you know, is fun and exciting on CodePen, I'm all for. But I like it because it was 100% kind of community organized. And, you know, there's lots of people involved, but you're definitely helping foster it. And then this past weekend, it was moved away from rainbows into pastel dots, and it just took off. So I don't know. What's your perspective on all this?
Well, I love the way it started, that it was just a fluke. That one day, and actually, you're the one that came up with the theme because you sent that tweet about the rainbow stars, and you said, "I guess it's just a rainbow star kind of day." And then you said, "Let's make it a thing," and so it became a thing. So you actually kickstarted it, you know, without you realizing that you did. I think it's a lot of fun, and I think it's a way that everyone can join in, because just because it's rainbow straight lines or rainbow dots or pastel dots, whatever the case may be, you can do it on Canvas or CSS or SVG. We don't care. It's just, we just want people to participate, and it's not a competition. It's just joining in some fun. And
yeah, that's what's kind of magical about it, too. It's in the same kind of way that, it doesn't, you know, like doing good, helping somebody out doesn't necessarily come back at you right away. You don't get anything by creating a rainbow star.
No.
You just get to, you get some high fives from your
to explore your creativity a little bit. And I think that we get so wrapped up in making sure everything is. I don't know, cross-browser friendly or just, you know, we get wrapped up in all the do's and don'ts of code that we lose our ability to create visually stunning things. And I think that this theme weekend gives us the opportunity to take a break from all the rules and just, you know.
I like that too, right?
Fantastic.
Because it's not as fun. It seems to be more fun than, you know, make a fold-out menu weekend. You know, that's
right, because that's too much work, and then you have to think too much. You have to think too much about, oh, well, this isn't going to work well in this browser. And with animation, you know what? It really doesn't matter if it works well in one browser and not the other. It doesn't make a difference. Open up whatever browser it works best in and view it there. When you get into, I don't know, buttons and navigation systems and layouts, it's just way too much thought involved. So. And I don't know, I prefer animations because you can just sort of go crazy and not worry about all the extra stuff.
Yeah, that's another thing I was going to ask you about, is that you know, whether you like it or not, you're a code artist. The things that you make are art. And that's interesting too. I mean, once in a while you can see a Tiffany, you know, a menu or something like that. But more often than not, it's just art for art's sake. If it seems like.
Yeah, I have a very creative mind. I just unfortunately don't have the talent or the skill to draw or paint or do any of those wonderful things. So the only way for me to get my creativity out is through code. But I visualize all these things and I have no outlet for it other than to try to put it, you know, in a code.
Yeah, you know? That's fascinating. So you have kind of painterly dreams and then it comes out through JavaScript. Yeah.
And it's funny. I'm the only person in my family with no real artistic talent. You know, everybody else can draw or paint or do something crazy like that. I just have the vision, you know, don't have the skill. So.
Oh, that's interesting.
Right.
I can't draw, but I can write a request animation loop.
I love it. That's art to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it's cool. I mean, Jen Schiffers obviously talks about art and code and stuff. I think it's something you can do on the web. You can express yourself or throw ideas on the virtual wall, and you should be able to. I think it should be celebrated more. I guess it's just kind of ephemeral, like it could disappear or break. But
it's nice that CodePen can help out with that a bit too. But it seems like most people in CodePen, they use it. Even if they're into the art aspect, you know, you can kind of tell that their job or other interests or whatever is more just straightforward web development stuff.
Right.
There's only but a handful of people that use it solely for kind of artistic expression, which is interesting. You keep it that way on purpose, you work, but not necessarily as a web developer, right?
No, not at all. Everything I do on CodePen, I do for pure fun. Mm-hmm. There's no professionalism behind it at all whatsoever. It's just, for me, it's for fun. So,
Nice. Cool. Let's see. What do you got, Dave? Should we do a little?
Well, it has been quite a couple weeks. We can't leave the internet for a couple weeks without stumbling into some hot drama.
What are those?
It's been a while.
I put one in here, but it's not the hottest of drama. It was just kind of an interesting.
Well, it sort of spawns the discussion. We got asked somebody sent in and said, "What do you think about unsucktheweb.com?" And it's worth mentioning just because recently there's been quite a kerfluffle. Of links, could we call it that? About the web and its future. The idea, I think it was Facebook Instant Articles was kind of the genesis. You know, like they're cannibalizing the web into their app, and you know, you don't go to websites anymore. You just go to a web or like a view in an app. Like a custom view. So what does that mean for the future of the web? And it's a very interesting discussion. There's been a lot of posts over on PPK. There's been a lot of rebuttals from people like in Facebook React land.
What was the other version? It was that there's, you know, the web's always too slow, right? And then there's too many tools on the web, or tools aren't the answer. Can we simplify things? And then the rebuttal is, you know, no, these tools help us. We almost need more of them to say, right. Okay. So I mean, the URL that we started with here is literally unsucktheweb.com. I think it's a Kyle Simpson thing, but it's not, you know, there's no big picture of Kyle on here. It's more generic than that. And it's not, the reason I put it up here is because, like, I bet I see one manifesto-ish thing like this a year for the last 7 years probably of my life. There's a, you know, there was the future friendly one with the helmets and stuff y'all probably seen. There's the extensible web manifesto. That's another one. There tends to, there's something about people that, you know, are around long enough on the web that, you know, I feel like once you hit your, maybe your 10 year anniversary on the web, it's time for you to create a manifesto and publish it somewhere. I feel like, I wonder.
And I'm over there. Yeah.
Feeling it's time, manifesto.
Time for the Tiffany Manifesto. Let there be art.
I think it's a very valid point. I think what's interesting is Facebook, the reasoning behind their instant articles or the marketing blurb is web pages can take over 10 seconds to load. Therefore, we're providing a better experience for our users. And that's like business speak, I think, for we're going to take people's money, or like we just want to get content and take people's money. So whatever, that's my opinion. Please don't sue me. and now it's a question of why is the web too slow? Like, what are we doing to make it slow? And I think, you know, PPK was kind of the first gun out, and a lot of people agree. He like blamed tools like frameworks and JS MVCs and all that for making the web slow. And I'm curious what y'all think. Is that the problem, or are we, is it a straw man for just people like not knowing what they're doing? I don't know. That's my question.
A tool is a pretty big word to just say, don't use them. That seems like a little insane. If you're saying don't use a JavaScript MVC because they're 200K and that's too big and stuff and there's too many dependencies, whatever, that's a different argument than don't use a tool, period. I mean, what is a tool in this conversation? Is it like, that's kind of a broad word to just say don't use them. I feel like I could probably brush up on the article. So if I'm editorializing based on the title, I apologize. But you know what I mean. Like, use Gulp to run some process before that website even turns into the code that ends up serving that website. Is that a tool that you shouldn't use? I mean, that doesn't affect web performance at all. It's something that happened before that website became a website. So how is that tool even in the same category as something that is served on the front end that really does affect performance?
Yeah, I think people are piling on their baggage about how complex web development is into this issue of like, is the web fast? Or like, you know, like, I don't know. But I think like JS MVCs are the big target.
Right. That's what the conversation is always actually about.
And like I saw one blog kind of mention analytics scripts, you know, and it was like, so web developers don't install those. And I'm like, but like the web developer isn't in charge. If there's like 800 analytics scripts, that's a like biz guy in a fancy shirt, like saying, oh, I need metrics, you know? I don't know. Tiffany, do you, you kind of do systems-y stuff. So you're probably in the, like, how do servers handle load and deploy fast quickly. But, like, do you have any thoughts on this whole, the web is dying because tools?
Again, I think what Chris was saying about what types of tools we're talking about is something that needs to be explored. Having a lot of dependencies for one site will definitely slow it down. If the server has to load multiple scripts before it can load the site, then yeah, obviously it's going to slow down the time it takes to load. Analytics, people love them, but it's a big slowdown for websites. But I'm not saying don't use analytics scripts because they're necessary nowadays. I think that there are ways to avoid using a lot of dependencies just with the basic site script alone. People use a library for everything nowadays and when it's not even necessary. So I think if you can try to avoid that, that'll help. But there's not too much that can be done when it comes to using tools. Tools are necessary. So
yeah. I was just going to throw this out. I'm building a little web app on Heroku, and I don't own those servers, but I still want to monitor them. So I heard on the CodePen radio that you should use New Relic, right, to monitor your servers and get error notifications, right, Chris? Isn't that what y'all
do? Yeah, there's a bunch of these tools, but yeah, New Relic is a pretty good one.
And so I installed it, and then I noticed it spat out a bunch of script tags in the head that I assume like async in other scripts or do stuff like that. And I was like, oh, bummer, you know. But I looked at the performance, and it's still okay. But like, it was interesting. I was just like, oh wait, but I need that tool to like know if my server's about to fall over at load, you know, like right. if I put 100 users on this app and it just barfs and like starts spitting out people's passwords or something like that, like I need to know about that. I don't know. I was just like, it's weird to blame tools. And then somebody on Twitter if you're listening, I'm not angry, but they were like, I can't believe you'd use New Relic. You know, real developers like write their own analytic tools and stuff like that.
No,
and I'm just like,
no,
I'm not going to do that for this because I wouldn't write it better, you know? So I'm going to use a framework or a library or a tool or whatever we're calling it. So it's just so it's interesting, man. The whole world, like this aversion to using anything anyone else ever coded seems like the biggest problem in web development. Just like, true. I didn't code it, so therefore it's terrible.
It's true.
Not invented here syndrome. That's true. Isn't that what they call that one?
Not invented here syndrome.
You know who uses New Relic? Everybody. So that's a, if you want to, that's a fact.
Jesus. There.
We have the new theme song, Chris Taylor. Thank you, Errata.
Yeah,
let's link up that. Yeah, it's pretty fun.
And he's gonna post like a breakdown of the song. I think he showed us a little preview. It's pretty cool. So follow his blog. We'll tweet links.
Among the people that will be surprised that we have a new theme song includes Aaron Dowd, our podcast editing dude. And I call him dude specifically because he calls himself the podcast dude in a new podcast about podcasting. I know I just said the word podcast a bunch of times there, but we'll throw the URL in there.
Big nuts.
So the point is, when we record Chop Talk, and maybe we'll do a little behind the scenes episode at one point about how all this goes down. There's quite a few moving parts, but one of them includes recording a bunch of audio tracks and individually, and then sending them over to Aaron, who stitches them together and cleans them up and makes sure the levels are right and bleeps any swearing, and you know, it just kind of helps us with the show notes and just makes CodePen, or he does CodePen Radio too. But he does Shop Talk Show. And now he has a podcast about podcasting called The Podcast Dude. So if you're interested in starting your own or interested in kind of the inside baseball of podcasting, be interesting to that. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. So thanks, Aaron, and stuff.
All right. Should we crack the tin on the meat, the canned meat and potatoes of the Shop Talk Show, question and answers. Here we go. Jonas Sandstrom writes in, I work at a company where I sometimes create small JavaScript-based games for social media campaigns. I find it hard to code interactive things that both support mouse events and touch events. I haven't found a good library to help me with this. Any suggestions?
So Jonas works with JavaScript a bunch and wants his things that he builds, games typically, to be mouseable and touchable. Have you played with that type of stuff, Tiffany?
I have, but I'm not using a library to do it.
There you go.
so I can't. I can't.
Dang.
Really, I don't know offhand of any libraries that would help him out if he's looking to use a library for it, mm-hmm. unfortunately, because I have nothing against libraries. I just try not to use them if I don't need to.
Let me put forth a simple scenario. Let's say I have a circle on a page, on a canvas, let's say, and I want to click with my mouse and drag it to somewhere else on a thing, like a really, really simple kind of thing. I draw a circle. I want to be able to click, hold down that click, move it, and the circle underneath my mouse cursor will move with me. So that, okay, I got it working with the mouse, and now I want it to work with my finger also. So I can press down with my finger, move my finger, and essentially the same kind of thing happens. Like, what's a way to approach that? Do you have to bind a bunch of stuff to two different types of DOM events, or
you can just add an event listener for a mouse down and a touch feature, and if you set up your mouse coordinates first, then when you add that event listener function, it's just basically saying, so now this new mouse position is going to be wherever my finger is or wherever my mouse is, mm-hmm. and it's going to move this object to that new
location.
It's
just named differently, right? It's instead of like mouse down, it's like on touch start.
There's mouse move. Yeah, it's on for touching. It's on touch start. There's a touch move event. Yeah. Then you've got your mouse move, mouse down, mouse up events. So, it's just really just adding an add event listener, which I think you can find documentation for that pretty much anywhere on the web. MDN has a decent explanation for doing mouse events.
And then there's like, is it modeled? So, you know, so when you attach an event handler like that, there's a callback, right, that passes an event object, and the event object has the information about like the XY coordinates of where that stuff happened. So so hopefully, though, that event object is like kind of the same in both the mouse moving and touch moving.
It's exactly the same. The only difference is within the add event listener event, instead of doing like e client x for the mouse, you would do like, I think it's e touches, and then there's an array for touch events. So it's a slight different verbiage between the two, mm-hmm. but it's essentially the same thing.
Right.
You don't have to do anything special for the touch events.
Cool. Somebody in the chat room is mentioning Phaser.io or Phaser.js is a little game framework that works in Canvas that probably does kind of have extra APIs and stuff for helping with making a game work both on mobile and otherwise. I have no idea, but it looks pretty nice.
I haven't used it. I haven't used Phaser yet. No, I've seen some demos for it, and it looks like it does extremely, you know, great things, but I haven't used it yet. Again, I'm not a library person, so not the one to ask, unfortunately.
Down to the metal.
Samar is mentioning Hammer.js, which is pretty good. I've used that before. It's pretty great. But I was going to mention the W3 pointer events, which is proposed by Microsoft, and Blink recently gave an intent to implement.
Does it simplify it down to the point that like pointer events DOM event will fire and it's the same? It's like you don't have to bind it to two different things. It's now just one thing.
Yeah, it's saying like a pointer, a finger, a mouse, a stylus, they are all pointers, right? That you point at something and move it around. But there's different grades like fine and coarse. Like you will have that information in the event. So if it's like a fine event, like you can go down to the pixel. But if it's a coarse event, you'd like go very wide or whatever. That's the equivalent of touch, right? So it's very interesting to me. I think it's maybe the superior specification, just because like, what's the difference? You know, if I attack a screen with 10 styluses and 10 fingers, you know, there's no difference, you know, I mean, except for size of the target.
This might be the best answered question we've ever done. Well, yeah, here's how you do it down to the metal. Here's two libraries that are great, and here's what the future is going to be. I think we basically nailed that.
I would, if you're like into games, I would maybe just try to prune something from a game library just because they have the D-pad sort of figured out, right? Like the exactly. left, right, up, down, up, up, down, down sort of stuff.
So, good.
Yeah, that's.
Oh, and I see on that W3 pointer event that they use a switch case for their detection of input type. I've never done that. That's interesting.
Oh, because that could even help in the touch stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Hammer is pretty close to support, or it supports both. It even like supports weird BlackBerry stuff. Okay. But
not to beat a dead horse here on this question, but there is kind of some interesting things that like are expected that happen with your finger that you can't do with touch, right? Like there's the, like you can right click on a mouse, but you can't on the web, and you can flick and pinch and do this kind of, they're like, they're not the same input things. So like, how do you think about that stuff as well? Like, what do you do on a pinch? I don't know. Let's
and that's
it can
CSS
get really deep and
Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Tiffany.
No, it's okay. I just said things can get really deep when you think about it on that level of having a reaction to every type of touch event there is.
And multiple of them happening at once, because I think you're not limited
at once, right?
All right, let's see. Just to move things along a little bit, we have Jamie B, who writes in with a kind of existential question here. How fluent does one need to be at JavaScript before identifying as a front-end developer? So let's try to dissect that a little bit. Do you?
Oh, boy. Yeah.
For example, do you need to... No, this is me talking now, not Jamie. Do you need to be able to do FizzBuzz? Do you need to understand Canvas? I mean, so Tiffany's very fluent at JavaScript. Do you identify as a front-end developer, or is that a misnomer?
I don't identify as a front-end developer. I do not, because I think there's so much more involved. I think if you're going to call yourself a developer, period, or a front-end developer, you should know a lot about everything. In my opinion, and that's from everything from HTML to CSS to JavaScript to even SVG nowadays. So it's not having one specific niche that you're good at. So I don't identify as a developer.
So that's probably, hopefully don't be too worried about that, Jamie. But the answer is you could be quite good at JavaScript and still not be a front-end developer. So those things aren't necessarily tied at the hip. But if Jamie wants to approach this in the opposite way, and Jamie wants to be a front-end developer, how good, like at what level of skill do you need to be a JavaScript, you know, what JavaScript do you need? And my answer would be probably starting with none. I still think that there's a place in this world for very good HTML and CSS people, although you certainly would benefit from knowing some JavaScript. That's always a good time. But I think you can be a front-end developer and just be excellent at HTML and CSS. That would be okay. And you could still call yourself a front-end developer. Would you refute that, Dave, these days? Or?
Yeah, I think there's takes all kinds, really. But, like, I don't know. Rebecca Murphy. I'm not. She does this baseline for front end developers every year or every 5 years, I guess it is. And I read that list and I'm like, I don't do any of those things. And it is true that Rebecca is way above my pay grade. So there's a discrepancy between what we both know. But then it's also, I think she is more heavy tooled on the JavaScript side of things, and I'm way more into the CSS, SAS, HTML side of things. You know, I do a lot of JavaScript, so but how fluent? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It's tough. I would say you need to, like, I don't know. You need to know how to Google to be a JavaScript developer. Can that be my answer?
Well, no, because that's not even clear. When you Google it, it doesn't even give you a clear idea of what being a developer entails. I think for JavaScript, I mean, I have friends that are front-end developers, and a few of them specialize in JavaScript. And to be honest, they know the fundamentals. You know, they understand data types and object types and arrays and, you know, loops, and they're very good at those things. And they don't need to go beyond that. So I think it depends on what you're going to be doing as a developer.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say it's this weird thing. I remember the day I opened like a JS file and I didn't feel overwhelmed or like inadequate, you know? So maybe there is like a point in your development where you are like, I don't know, where you're just like, hey, I actually know this now. When I open this file, I don't like break out in a sweat, you know? So that might be a thing, you know? I mean, Tiffany, I know you don't identify as a developer, but or a front end developer, but you also probably know more JavaScript than I do. So it's an interesting world.
It is. Yeah, I think that it's a comfort level too. If you're comfortable with your own skills or you're comfortable with learning new skills, because there's nothing wrong with going into a new position as a developer and not knowing everything, as long as you're confident that you can learn those things and you can learn them fairly quickly. So I don't know. You just never know till you try. What's the worst that can happen? You go and you don't do so well. Okay, move on to something else, or you know, or just get more experience and then try again. But
you got this, Jamie. You'll be okay. You can. You are a front end developer already in spirit. I want to tell you about the Environments for Human. Thank you for your sponsorship. They're having a CSS summit, and it's not a first time thing for them. This is the 7th annual CSS summit. I've only been making websites for about 7-8 years. They've been doing this thing for a long time. It's an online conference coming up this July 7th, 8th, and 9th. It's one of their big, like, 3-day, like, official. This is one of their hardcore conferences, a quintessential E4H conference, and you know how it goes down. You can attend it from anywhere in the world. You just need an internet connection and a desktop, because you can, you know, or just a computer with a screen. You know what I'm saying? They bring the experts to your desktop. The CSS Summit is the online conference that improves your workflow while inspiring your work. They got people here from that are on the core SaaS team that work for Adobe, work for Google, IBM, Sparkbox. The whole thing is about CSS, which is awesome. I like conferences that are focused on a particular technology. It makes it kind of deep dive, and everybody has kind of a shared community with that, which is kind of great. But there's also talks about designing in SVG, the thing I'm super interested in. There's talks about SAS, of course, how CSS works with Angular, much, much more. And this is the best part for the first 20 people that sign up for the CSS Summit, you know, through ShopTalk. Use discount code ShopTalkTalk50 and get half off the 3-day ticket.
What?
That's crazy. They've been doing this for us lately, which is like, insane. So it's just a Shop Talk push for these online conferences, which are awesome. So go to the buy tickets page, put your ticket in, and enter the promo code ShopTalk50. It's only good for the first 20 people that do it, but it's literally half off this 3-day thing.
Unprecedented discounts.
It is. Well, there's one precedent. And it's the last time they did it. But
one precedent.
It's mono precedent.
One precedent.
Anyway, that's gonna be
awesome. Hey, this is gonna be good. It looks like a good great lineup. So all right, next question, shall we? Jacob Davidson writes in, I've got a question about GitHub open source etiquette. I built a simple JavaScript module for creating resizable containers, and it's open sourced on GitHub. This is my first legit open source project. I've had positive response from the community. It's been fun, rewarding to see people modify my code and use it in their own projects. That said, I have a pull request that makes some great changes, but it also has some changes I'd rather omit. Is there a correct way to merge part of this code while still giving them credit, or do I tell them I like some of your code, but not all of it? Can you remove this and try again? Or do I submit a pull request on their branch and then merge it into the master branch? Do you guys have experience dealing with this? And if so, how do you handle the situation?
I love this. So here's the situation again. Open source project on GitHub. somebody contributes to that project, makes some good changes, but Jacob doesn't like all the changes, and it's his open source project. So it's kind of like, you know, what do you do? Do you ask them to resubmit that pull request with just the parts that you want? Or do you, you know, kind of ask them, hey, how do you feel about that? Or are there, if like, if they just want to maintain their own branch, they have more than enough rights to do that. Maybe you could be like, well, I like this idea. Do you mind if I just throw it in the project and kind of credit you? Or do you want to make a new pull request? How would you handle it, Dave? I mean, just, I can't, interested. I have some questions for Tiffany on this too, because it really...
I mean, I typically say, I start a conversation like, hey, awesome change. I have questions about this, and that gives you kind of like a point to talk about like what their design decisions were. You know, I had one time somebody rewrote either fit vids or fit text into something I couldn't read. Like it was so like how this guy codes or in way different than how I code, to where I was like, oh, I'm unable to maintain this if I put all these changes in. So it was, so I didn't do it. And that's a bummer, to say no, but you know, you kind of have to, I don't know, if it becomes a maintenance nightmare for you later, then maybe that's a problem if for some pet feature. If it's like a core fix, you should do it. But I don't know. I've recently taken the Tina Fey bossy pants approach, which is the yes and like improv method. Like, yes, and do you want to be a maintainer?
Let's notch this thing up a notch. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, I don't know. I'm just into the, like, rather than just like shooting everything down. I like, in good editors do shoot things down, but rather than just being scared of change, I'm like, sure, if it makes it better, let's do it. Yeah. Merge away. Let's do it. You know, in terms of the technical side of things, you can like pull theirs into a branch. Like GitHub actually does it pretty cool. Like it's a PR/ the pull request issue number branch that you can just pull down, and then you can like cherry pick lines of code to merge in, you know, but that's tough too, because maybe there's some entanglement between the bottom lines of code and the top lines of code, but you can cherry pick that, and they should get some version of credit. So
we don't have a concept of merge request type of stuff or pull request type of stuff on CodePen, but Tiffany, I'm sure you've seen in your time there that occasionally people are like, oh, I like what you did here, but like maybe you should do this instead, or to make it more cross-browser friendly, you could do this or whatever. How do you tend to handle those things?
Well, you know, I'm a bad person to answer this question. I don't typically change my code once I do it. People have suggestions, of course, and they make their suggestions. Yeah. And I usually say thank you. And if you want to fork it, you're more than welcome to. That's that's kind of how I deal with that.
Well, that's fair. That's why forking exists. And everybody has the right to do that. It's the same thing on GitHub. It's like, I like this change, but it's not right for my pen or my repo or whatever.
Yeah. Or it's not what I had in mind or whatever case may be. Right. So I think in this case, for this question, asking that person to submit a new pull request would probably be the best way to go.
That's what strikes me as the correct way to go too. You know?
This way, you're
that
only,
way they get the proper credit too. It's right. Like you still,
And then he and then Dave made a good point about the you can extract certain lines of code, but then they might be entangled with other lines that are there that are previous or after it. So at least if you ask that person to resubmit, then they can do it in a way where you don't worry about losing functionality because you just picked out certain pieces of it. So. That makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sure does. I've always felt like extra guilty about it too. I'm like, I don't want to ask you to do another pull request because that feels like you're trying to be helpful and nice to me, but now I'm asking you to do even more work. So then I'm like, well, I can just do it for you. I have the project open right here. Here's the part that I like. Can I just do it for you? But then it's like, that doesn't, like, etiquette wise, doesn't feel quite right. Cause then it's my commit, not their commit, even though they wrote the code. So like that doesn't, it kind of feels a little iffy. So I would start with, you know, making your case clear, like Dave said. And then, you know, I'm just not sure where to go from there. I guess ask them if it would be okay if they made a new pull request while simultaneously offering you to do it with code credit somehow. I'm not sure there is a perfect answer.
No, in my opinion, if someone's willing to do the first pull request, and they should be honored that you even like some of their ideas. And they should be willing to do a second one if they want to be a part of that project.
They should.
Otherwise,
they should.
Don't bother.
The only reason I laughed is because you know, I can definitely see the a situation like that going down and be like, well, I'm done then. Bye. I don't know. But you're right.
No, that could happen. People's egos are on the line, you know.
They are.
You know, but that's the problem with the world today. People and their egos, you know. Get over yourself.
There's a great, I've been listening to this Sturgill Simpson record that's so good. And he's got this like song where it's just the first line of his, woke up today and decided to kill my ego. And it's so awesome. There, I think everybody should listen to that song and wake up tomorrow and kill their ego. Let's do another sponsor really quick. Lynda.com. That's LYNDA.com.
LYNDA.com/shoptalk.
This episode brought to you in part by Lynda.com, the learning platform online with over 3,000 on-demand videos. Let me take a pause. Let me look at the number. They publish it. I think that's kind of fun. 3,565 video courses. And I say that number not to be like shocking about it, but just think how many courses that are. And it's not just like, oh, that's because anybody can throw a course up on Lynda. Exactly the opposite. The courses take a long time to produce. I know because I have one on there. You have to go through this whole production process where you're like kind of crafting what the videos are going to be video by video with an intro, middle part, and end part. It needs to go through editing and stuff. That's before you even get the chance to get on a plane and fly out there to record it, because they have to really record all these things in like super cool soundproof booths and stuff. The quality is super high. So 3,565 video courses that have gone through all that with teachers that are vetted anyway, you know, like they go out and find teachers for these things. It's kind of an incredible thing. Anyway, so all those courses on all kinds of stuff, all the web stuff we talk about, but also photography and design and education and audio and video and business classes, all that type of stuff. It's all on Lynda.com. They have apps for all your different devices. You know, you log in and become a member. And it's like, oh, for all that, it's like a college replacement, but it's at the, you know, it's way, you know, not to call it cheap, it's inexpensive. Becoming a member of Lynda is kind of a no brainer, really. So, you know, classes on Illustrator and Android and Java and business and all that type of stuff that you'd expect. I always like to look at some of their newest courses. Here's four of their very newest courses: up and running with Node.js. So they have the kind of those broad strokes classes. Then there's more tight stuff: photographing the fjords of New Zealand. Nice, right? So it's not just like how to use my camera. You know, they have classes like that too, if you need to know what an f-stop is. But sometimes it's nice to learn through projects, through real world experience. That's what this class is. Creating animations with Adobe InDesign. What? Didn't even know you could do that. So there you go, whole class on it. Drawing a wedding monogram in Illustrator. Super specific. I just love that they have these kind of broad strokes and fine strokes courses. Pretty cool. That's lynda.com/shoptalk. We got time for another one here.
All right, here we go. This is from Weston Ross. Here we go. I am currently in the Navy as an aviation electronics technician. Thank you for your service. I am separating from the Navy and plan to go to a junior college in the fall. Over the years, I've developed a fascination over AI machine learning. However, I originally joined the Navy because to use the GI Bill to go to school for graphic and web design. If I learn web design during school, would that knowledge benefit towards skills used for AI machine learning? Or would time be better spent learning the languages needed for AI? This is a heavy question.
Yeah, it sure is. It's like, so I know some web design and development, and I don't feel like I know anything about AI. So I guess my first take on this thing is like, I don't know. So Weston's in the Navy, and he's started out school for graphic and web design. I would consider it pretty much a 180 to start learning stuff towards AI. What do you think, Tiffany? You kind of know servers, some front end stuff and back end stuff. Do you feel like you have a handle on?
No. No.
We don't have to explain to Weston how to get into AI, because I'm sure none of us necessarily know. But it just seems like I don't know, Weston, that your web design stuff is going to help you.
I don't think that they're really related at all.
Mm-hmm.
Other than you sit in a chair and use a keyboard.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Your typing skills will transfer over. No
Definitely.
Problem.
I know John Rezig is making a neural network for his art, like his woodblock print art, like software, which is very AI sort of stuff, but it's probably not based on his jQuery knowledge. So I do think they're totally different. If you want to learn AI machine learning, I would probably, yeah, start learning heavy languages. I mean, there are some very specific languages, like Lisp is, I think, still a big one. Haskell, maybe, kind of highly recursive ones. I'm probably out of my depths here, but you know, you're going to want like a big, you know, big language to start getting into that. So, I don't think HTML and CSS and JavaScript are going to get you quite what you need. So I would maybe pursue that either junior college, or you may have better luck with AI stuff at a university, like a big school.
Right, I haven't heard of too many junior or community colleges offering programs like that. So I think it's definitely a university.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's got the GI Bill going for him here, so you can go anywhere you want, man.
Yeah, pretty much, right?
Yeah. But I mean, you could also knock out all your math and stuff. Like, it's going to be a butt ton of math to start with. So,
you know, Java actually might. I don't think JavaScript will help too much, but Java might, only because of the logarithmic data that's involved with mm-hmm. Java and algorithms and stuff like that. So that might give him a leg up, maybe. Mm-hmm.
I was going to say Java too. Yeah, it's like fully threaded. You know who you might want to reach out to? Raquel Velez, Rockbot. You might want to listen to that old episode of Shop Talk. She made robots for a living. So she might have some good information for you. Nodebots maybe is a thing. Anyway, all right. Hopefully we helped you. Chris, what do you think?
I think we should do the wrap up.
Let's wrap it up. Tiffany, thank you so much for spending time with us here on Shop Talk Show. For those who aren't already following you and giving you money, how can they do that? And then what's one thing you'd like to plug before you head out?
Plug?
do you have a book? Do you have...
I don't have a website. Have a blog. I don't have a book. You can find me on CodePen. You can follow me on Twitter.
TMR develops.
On both for CodePen and Twitter.
Wonderful.
Well, perfect. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your day and sitting down and talking to us. We really appreciate it. And thanks for all the work you do on CodePen. Speaking of CodePen, Chris.
Yeah, we have a job board on CodePen. It's also the Shop Talk job board. It's also the CSS Tricks job board. It's all the same job board, but it helps people find jobs that they're looking for. There's one particular job we want to tell you about, and it's for a company called BitGo. I happen to know that the people, the this very special type of person that listens to a lot of tech podcasts is also happens to be the kind of people that are generally into Bitcoin. I'm super interested in it. I happen to not own any at the moment, but I think it's I like any podcast that comes up that's about Bitcoin. I'm always all over it because it's so fascinating how it solved all these problems with online payment and how it's anonymous and how enough people use it that it's valuable and has it. It's still it's just fascinating to watch all the time, and everybody's got an opinion of whatever. But there's still like this moment where it's like early in Bitcoin's history. And anyway, that was like a big weird thing about Bitcoin. But there's a company called BitGo whose mission is to secure the world's Bitcoin. Bitcoin, you know, I guess that's just you end it
lockers,
there.
Yeah.
And their platform is used by all the big, like, they're like the platform you used behind the Bitcoin stuff that you build, which is kind of awesome. They're well-funded. It's all this kind of thing. They're looking for a front-end developer. So if you want to like get in on the Bitcoin thing, you're really into it. You want to build products around, but you just kind of want to be have your job be Bitcoin-related. They're looking for a front-end developer at BitGo. That's bitgo.com. And we'll link to the job posting here at the end too. So thanks to BitGo for that. Pretty cool job.
Yeah. And if you need a job, head over and you hate your job, apply for that one or head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs. And thank you very much, everybody, for listening. Be sure to rate this up in your podcatcher of choice. 5 stars. It's just that easy. And follow us on Twitter at shoptalkshow. That's how you get all the updates. Like, sorry for playing things in 1.2x. So anyway, we'll tell you how to fix podcasts that occasionally go out a little too hot. So thanks, everyone, for listening. And Chris, you got anything else you'd like to say?
Shoptalkshow.com.